Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. This show airs every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark, Lisa and Nancy.
Hi, everybody. This is Lisa, your co-host from New Jersey. Welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. We're airing live from Artist First World Radio. We have a really great show for you tonight. Really, really exciting. Our guests tonight are Tippi Hedren and Rosemarie Terenzio. So grab your martini, put into something really comfortable, put on your best high heels, and stay tuned with us for the next hour for some great Chit Chat. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Lisa. I'm so excited about this show tonight. We've done lots of research and lots of reading.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exciting. I can't believe who's on the phone with us right now. There's really a legend, a Hollywood legend.
I know. Well, I have here in my notes, Lisa, that we're supposed to take 1 second about products. I have mine ready. Do you?
Yep. You tell us first.
All right. Lisa and I take time. Our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners have asked us to share products with everyone that we've tried and love. So I'm going to talk about a different one tonight. I am in love with my Total Gym. We've seen Christie Brinkley advertise it in Chuck Norris, and the infomercials are for real. 10, 15, 20 minutes a day, you feel great. I love my Total Gym. So that's my product of the day.
Oh, my Total Gym's a gym that I pay every month and never go to. I wouldn't even get one in the house because I wouldn't even walk down the basement to use it. Too late when it comes to that. My product this week, now everybody knows I'm a lipstick junkie, and I buy lipsticks. I don't care how much. I'll pay $32 for a lipstick if I have to. I mean, I love all types of lipsticks. I wear Nars, I wear Chanel, I wear MAC, Laura Mercier, Laura Geller. However, I was in Ulta the other day, and I can't, and CoverGirl had buy one, get one half price. So I was just looking. I'm like, oh, let me buy a couple of these. Guess what? I love the lipstick. It was $5.99. It was one of the best lipsticks I've ever had. It's creamy. It goes on real pigment and nice and colorful, and it lasts all day. Beautiful. Creamy, good color, cheap. You can't beat it.
Wow.
I don't remember exactly which one it was, but it's just in a square tube, a regular lipstick tube. Big choice of colors. So I got two lipsticks for like $9, and they're terrific. So that's
we'll have to try
cheap.
That.
Yeah.
All right. So if anyone is interested, you do have permission to wear your lipstick while doing the Total Gym. Well, we are just so thrilled to introduce to our Chit Chat Cafe Live listeners. She's an actress and a former fashion model. We all are in love and have seen her movies many times. The Alfred Hitchcock's famous movie, The Birds and Marnie. We applaud her for extensive efforts in animal rescue, which is near and dear to both of our hearts. We like to welcome Tippi Hedren.
Well, thank you so much. This is so much fun. I have been looking at the Total Gym on TV as all of their advertisements and all that sort of thing. And, you've really convinced me. I think I'm going to get one.
Well, good. And you know what I like about it, Tippi? You can put it at a beginner, an intermediate, or an advanced level.
Yeah.
And you can, seriously, 10 minutes, 15, 30, that's all you need.
Okay, how much of my house is it going to take up?
I would say it's a little bit longer than an ironing board. It's probably an ironing board and a half.
An ironing board and a half, okay. And how wide?
Well, it stays lowish to the ground, but there's one side of it that's about
5 feet tall.
Can it slip under my bed?
Yes. You can fold it down.
Yay.
I think. We better make sure of that because I just have this, I have it in my little exercise room, and but it's really fun to do, and it's true. I would love to have Chuck Norris and Christy Brinkley come on and talk about it more, but I love my total shift.
Well, maybe they will. Who knows? You know, it's very important for those of us who have back problems because, you know, when you've been hit by a couple of or a lot of lions and tigers over a number of years, you know, I feel like I'm an old football player.
Oh, you know? Well, and as with everything on our Chit Chat Cafe Life, remember, listeners, check with your doctor before trying these new products, especially if you're wearing lipstick.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good one, too. That's a good thing that with a CoverGirl lipstick. Great. That's a really fun thing for you to do for your listeners.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to join us anytime. If you'd like to join us for a little fun segment, you can think of a product and come back and tell your favorite.
Oh, okay.
Good.
I will do that. Well, in the meanwhile, I guess we've been
Have to just start with, you amazed us all, and we've seen it many times, Alfred Hitchcock's movie, The Birds.
Isn't it fun? You know, that movie has a life of its own, and, you know, what it's done for me and the things that I want to do in my life has just been awesome, just been amazing because of the celebrity that it gives you, you know, when you've done a film that becomes a real staple, you know. So everybody's seen it. You either love it or you're scared to death or whatever, and you'll never forget it because every time you walk outside, you see the birds.
You do, and I live in Minnesota, and we have all those crows where I live.
I was born in Minnesota.
I know that. That's what I wanted to say to you. Welcome, another Minnesota girl. Where in Minnesota?
I was born, my parents lived in Lafayette, which is in southern Minnesota, and the town was so small that they didn't have a hospital, so I had to go to New Ulm to be born.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, but I grew up there, and I up into my high school years, which was fabulous, and my parents moved to California when I was in the middle of high school, which is a terrible thing to have to do to a child, you know, to move them in their high school years. It was so hard for me. It was really hard. However, I'm going to go back there in 2 weeks, and I'm going to meet
Minnesota?
All my friends. Yeah, to Minneapolis. Yes.
Oh, it would be so much fun to say hi to you, but just in case not, hello, Tippy.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. Minnesota is gorgeous.
Oh, I know it is. I know. I'm going to be doing introducing movies with Ben Mankiewicz for Turner Classic Movies.
Nice.
Yeah, be fun. Be wonderful.
Well, that will be wonderful. Now, is it true that Alfred Hitchcock discovered you while you were making a TV commercial?
Well, after I had done the commercial and it was airing, yes.
Okay.
And he saw it, and he and his wife, Alma, and they decided to find out who the girl was, where she was, and I had just moved to California. So it was all very, very perfect. It was a complete shock to me and a very welcomed one because moving from New York, where I'd been a fashion model with Eileen Ford from 1950 to 1961 or so, and my career was going really well, and everything was wonderful. And but Melanie, my daughter Melanie Griffith, needed to just have some freedom to, you know, say, I'm going outside to play, Mommy. And you can't do that when you live right in New York City. So we moved to California. We packed up the dog and the kitty and the bunny, and we all moved back to L.A. And I rented an expensive home, and I thought my career would go on as it did, and it wasn't. And I'm thinking, oh, what am I going to do? I don't type. And all of a sudden, on Friday the 13th of October of 1961, I received a call from Universal Studios asking if I was the girl in the Seago commercial. It was a diet drink.
Right.
Pet milk product. I think I weighed all of about 100 pounds when I did the commercial. I don't weigh much more than that now. But anyway, I said yes, and the executive at Universal said, this producer is interested in you, and I said, oh, who is it? And he said, well, if you come over, we'll talk about it. And he asked if I would bring film and photographs and all that sort of thing, so I did, and he didn't tell me who the producer was, and so all weekend long, was thinking, who is this person? What's going on here? And Monday morning, I went back for my film and my photo book, and I was introduced to all kinds of three or four different executives. Nobody would tell me who it was. Then I was asked to go to MCA, Music Corporation of America, which was the biggest talent agency in the world at that time. And it was an agent there who said, Alfred Hitchcock wants to sign you to a contract. They had watched the film and all of my 13 or 14 commercials and looked at my photo book. And he said, he wants to sign you to a contract. If you agree with the terms, we'll go over to meet him. So I thought, wow, how terrific is this? And I signed the contract, and we went over to meet him. He opened the door and stood there looking very pleased with himself. And we talked about travel. We talked about foods, about wines, about, nothing about the motion picture industry. He brought Edith Head in for me to meet, which was very exciting, being a model and meeting that incredibly superior designer, an Academy Award. I think she had 9 or 10 Academy Awards. She called them her children. I met other members of his crew, the DP and the set director, and everybody. And then it was decided after a while to do a screen test. And I knew they were. In the midst of writing the screenplay for The Birds, and it never occurred to me that I would even be considered for it. And we did the screen test, and after it was assembled, it was a huge deal. It was 3 days, and we did scenes from Rebecca, Notorious, and Catch a Thief, three entirely different women. And Martin Balsam was flown in to be my leading man, and Edith Head did the clothes, and it was a real incredible experience.
And, that's amazing. Now, were you afraid of the birds?
Well, I didn't know anything about the birds at that time. No, because I thought this was a normal thing to do, a screen test. And about 2 weeks later, I was invited to dinner with the Hitchcocks at Chasen's restaurant, and Lou Wasserman, head of Universal, joined us, and Mr. Hitchcock placed a beautifully wrapped package from Gump's in San Francisco in front of me. I opened it, and it was a pin of a gold and seed pearls of three birds in flight. And he said, we want you to play Melanie Daniels in The Birds. Well, I practically, burst into tears. I got very, watery-eyed, and I looked over at Alma. She was water-eyed, and Lou Wasserman had one tear, and I looked over at Mr. Hitchcock, and he sat there looking very pleased with himself. So that's when the work really started, and since I had never done a drama on stage or anything, any real acting, I mean, commercials give you a great technical advantage, but becoming a character, learning how to break down a screenplay, becoming a character, looking at the different relationships within the body of the screenplay. I mean, it's a huge job. And I had Alfred Hitchcock as my drama coach.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think about working on Marnie?
Of course, they're two entirely different films, and I must say that I really, really got into the acting with Marnie, because she was such a complicated character. And, of course, I had the wonderful Sean Connery to be my leading man. I've been very lucky. I've had Rod Taylor as my leading man in The Birds, and Sean Connery in Marnie, and then I did Charlie Chaplin film and with Marlon Brando and Sophia Loren. So it's been a wonderful journey for me.
What was Alfred Hitchcock like?
Well, he was a very complicated person. He was very controlling, which was a real problem for me. He had a great sense of humor. He loved dirty limericks. He was, I've never since then worked with a director who worked from 9 to 5. I mean, he looked at it as a business. And, you know, usually with films, you can work into 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning or all night or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he always, the martini shot was at 5 o'clock. But he was so exacting as to what he wanted out of his movie. He felt like the film was done before the first day of shooting. It was an amazing experience, and it spoiled me terrifically.
Hmm. Now, tell us about your animal. You know, your
the Shambhala Preserve. Well, that became my life's mission. I have always been an animal lover. I did 2 films in Africa in 1969 and 1970. And during that time, environmentalists were telling everyone in the world that if we, the people of the world, didn't do something right then, 1969 and 70 and into the 70s, that if we didn't stop the advance of the population and sport hunting and poaching, and that by the year 2000, the wild animals would be gone. And so there was a lot of awareness going out, and it was at that time when we learned about the plight of the whale, the panda, the tiger, the elephant. And my then husband was a producer, so we thought, let's do a movie. And kicking around ideas of how should we focus on one animal, should we focus on a group, a species, what should we do? That answer came very quickly when we went to a photo safari in Mozambique on the Gorongosa Game Preserve. There was a game warden who left his house because it flooded during the rainy seasons. And after that, a pride of lion moved into that house. It became the largest pride in all of Africa. There must have been 25, 30 lions of all sizes living in that house. So we decided, you know, it was awesome. They were sitting in the windows, going in and out the doors, napping on the verandas. The cubs were playing out in front. I mean, if you can picture something like that, it wasn't an African exactly looking house, but anyway, we decided that that's what we were going to do. And we got back to the coast. We were going to use Hollywood acting animals. They have a 9-month shoot over and out. So we were using sometimes 10 cats at a time in a scene, sometimes 5, sometimes 8, whatever. And the Hollywood acting, the trainers of these Hollywood acting animals, well, after they read the script, they just laughed at us and said, this can't be done. And we said, and why not? And they said, because of the numbers of animals you have working together. And we said, well, that's the way they lived in Africa. And he said, that's not it. It's the instinctual dictates to fight an animal they don't know. I don't want my cat hurt. I don't want to be hurt. Because they're violent when they're fighting. And so it was suggested to us to acquire our own animals to do the movie. And eventually, after a movie was over, it was titled Roar, like the lion's roar. After it was over, I was, you know, thoroughly convinced that our country is crazy for allowing these animals to be born to be pets. They're apex predators, top of the food chain, one of 4 of the most dangerous animals in the world. And our country is saying, our government is saying, oh, yes, you can breed these animals, and we'll give you a permit through the Department of Agriculture, which is incredibly insane. These animals can be so deadly that there is nothing that can stop them short of a bullet in the head.
Oh, God forbid.
Yes.
Have you ever had a close encounter with an animal where you got too close to it and it hurt you in any way?
Yes, almost all of us were hurt doing our movie. I was bitten in the back of the head. My daughter's face was scratched. My stepson found his head in the mouth of a lion. Our DP was scalped. I am the best person to talk about this issue because I know from the accidents that I have personally witnessed and been involved with that these animals are not pets. They are absolutely beautiful. You're taking this apex predator, top of the food chain, one of four of the most dangerous animals, and they are insanely beautiful. They have a sense of humor. They have a capacity for love. They have their inferiority complexes, their dominancy problems. But the dictates that they have cannot be changed and never will be changed. And they are so deadly because of it. And they're so focused on whatever they want, they get. No, so I'm working on a bill right now to stop the breeding of these animals to be sold as pets or for financial gain. I was successful in getting a bill passed in 2003 titled the Captive Wildlife Safety Act, which I took the bill to my congressman. I co-authored the bill with one of our veterinarians, and he introduced the bill, and I testified for it, listing. I only went on a public safety issue. I didn't get into how horribly some of these animals are treated and the way they live. It would break your heart to hear all of the stories. And the bill passed unanimously in the House and Senate, and President Bush signed it on December 19th of 2003. And that bill simply stops the interstate traffic of these animals to be sold as pets. But the one that I'm working on now, you know, and some sort of a business becomes so huge, according to U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the exotic animal business is on a par with illegal drugs. And when that much money gets involved, it's dangerous. My life was threatened. In 2003, they were going to bring in illnesses and diseases because their livelihood was threatened. And you know, they may be very tough, but they're not very smart. They left the threat on my answering machine. So I called in the authorities, and they said, "Yes, this is serious." And I live on the preserve. I still do, and I had to have someone live in my home with me, which I didn't appreciate. If I left the preserve, I had to have a rented car, have somebody with me before I got back into the car to return to Shambhala. I had to check under the car to make sure that there wasn't a bomb placed underneath it. And it happened during one of the weekends that we were open to the public. And they sent the sheriff to go through everybody's bags to make sure that they weren't bringing in anything that could harm me or the animals. And when they found that the man lived out of the state of California, the FBI came in. He was an animal dealer, and they got him. And so I was free again. But it was a terribly unnerving time. But I feel that what I was doing was important, that it was necessary, and right now I'm working on the federal bill to ban the breeding of the exotic feline for personal possession. And in fact, I'm going to be having a conference call with several of the main players in Washington at 10 o'clock in the morning about the bill. and hopefully it's going to be introduced within a couple of weeks.
Well, we're very proud of you.
Thank you.
Are you on
you
Twitter?
You know, I'm very proud of you because, you know what, you've let me tell my story.
We love it. And, you know, we'd like to have you come back again and think of a product. We could have girl talk.
Oh, okay. I'd love that. I would love that.
Now, we have actually been tweeting about applauding you for your federal ban on breeding of big cats. Lisa and I, we honor you, and we are just so proud of you. Tippi, it would be our honor to have you join us again on Chit Chat Cafe Live.
Thank you, and if you want, anybody wants to look us up, it's Shambhala, shambala.org for organization.
And we're going to have a link on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website for all of our listeners to click, because you can even donate.
Yes, you can, and we operate totally on donation, including my own. I have never been paid on any level of this. All of the money goes to the care of the animals, and it's an incredibly wonderful place. So when you come to California, I want you to come and visit Shambhala.
Oh, we would love that.
Okay. Wonderful.
That would be our honor because we're just in love with these animals.
You could stay overnight in our tent.
Oh.
And we have afternoon safaris one weekend a month, and we're starting in May, on May 12th, our sunset safaris, which are absolutely wonderful.
Well,
wow, sounds cool.
Tippi Hedren, thank you very much. We've been a fan for years, and what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank
Total
you.
Honor. Total
I can't
honor.
Wait
so
to talk to you
us.
Again. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your evening.
We'll have you back.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was really amazing, I have to say.
Lisa, that would be fun to visit her in California.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking about coming to California. I think that's where the place we should go.
We'll have to take Chit Chat Cafe Live to the safari. I'm totally in for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Laura Geller Makeup, Intimacy Bras, and St. Croix Orthopedics. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking about Fairy Tale Interrupted with Rosemarie Terenzio, JFK Jr.'s assistant.
Now back to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm particularly excited for this segment because I loved her book and I love all things Kennedy. I'd like to introduce Rosemarie Terenzio. Rosemarie was born in the Bronx and served as a personal assistant and publicist and confidant to John F. Kennedy Jr. And she's the author of Fairy Tale Interrupted, a memoir of life, love, and loss. Welcome, Rosemarie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is such an honor. This is just so cool.
Oh, thank you so much.
I loved your book. I did. I just, you made him sound so real.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah, I tried. Thank you.
You know, think of the Kennedys as these iconic figures, but you just made it so personal and so, it's so nice to see that he was so normal.
Yeah, you know, he was. He was pretty, you know, pretty down to earth, which is great. It was a great experience.
So start from the beginning. Tell everybody how you got the job. I know you were working in the PR firm.
Yeah, I was working at a PR firm that John's partner, who ended up being his partner, George, was my boss. So I was working with him, and then John started coming in, and we weren't quite sure what was happening and why he was there, but it was, we soon found out that he was there to start a new magazine called George.
I like the part when you said when you went into to the office, it was so sleek that it made you feel fat and poor.
And poor, exactly.
I know exactly that feeling.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, because I wasn't used to that, and that wasn't, you know, what I was used to being around, so it was a little intimidating at the time, I have to say.
I liked also that the two of you got on each other's nerves. Almost.
Oh,
like,
yeah, definitely. It was, like, yeah, he could be pretty annoying.
The part that where he was leaving for Italy, and he was, like, annoying you about his mom's auction.
Yeah.
Called him a dick.
He was. I mean, for that, he was. He was being, he's being really annoying and dickish about the auction by not telling me what was going on. And I was sort of like, well, how am I supposed to know how to do this? I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
And, he could care less. He was sort of like, well, figure it out. You know, figure it out.
Right. So tell me, like, what was it like day to day? You just did everything.
It was crazy. It was very. It was always this sort of hectic pace of everyone wanting, just 5 minutes, just 1 minute, just all the time. So you were constantly having to field, calls but not just calls. It was also people in the office who would come in and be like, "Is John in? I need to talk to him for 5 minutes." And you kind of had to be a little firm and say no, you have to make an appointment, or you have to schedule time, or what is it about? And people did not like that very much. They wanted to, kind of waltz right in and feel free. I think it was also a different environment, mm-hmm. So people felt like he was more accessible than he was, say, on the street or at an event or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they felt like, oh, I could just walk in. I get to say hi, hang out with John Kennedy for a little while, but it would disrupt if you let that happen. It would disrupt the entire office. So I had to be a little bit more, no, you've got to schedule some time, or you've got to tell me what it's about, and people did not like that, especially in the beginning.
Did he like to be yelled on the street, like, "Hey, John,"
I don't think it was something he minded. He didn't mind it. He certainly didn't feel like it was a burden. Like, he never felt like him being famous was a burden to him. It was more like, this is just my life. This is just what my life is. And he always said, there are worse things that could happen to you. And also he felt like, well, if that's the case, if that's who I am and what I have, then I have to do a lot with it. It never seemed like it was, a burden to him. Like, oh, poor me. I have, I remember him being asked in an interview once, I guess you don't have much privacy. And he was like, actually, I have a good amount of privacy. It never felt like it was bothersome to him.
Did you ever, when you were alone with him, think, oh, my God, I'm with John F. Kennedy, Jr.? Like, every once in a while, would it just, like, hit you? Or no, he was just, like, the guy next
door.
It was more
the way other people reacted, like, when I was out in public with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it would kind of be like, wow, people really, like, it would hit you, like, oh, my goodness. Like, this is kind of a big deal,
Yeah,
yeah. People really, loved him and wanted to be around him and wanted, you got that more. I got that more when I was outside of the office. When we were in the office, it was kind of, day to day and working and getting the magazine out and scheduling and all that. So you kind of lost sight of that. But when we were in the office, when we were outside the office, it was like, wow. It was like, oh my goodness. It was a little scary sometimes too, because you'd be like,
sure.
You don't realize it,
Still on the street.
Yeah, it wasn't that as much as it was just that you realized, like, you're working for someone that's a really big deal.
Right, right. Was he as handsome in person as he is in his pictures? Was he better looking in person? Or just
he was actually better looking in person, which kind of shocked me when I first met him, because I thought, wow, he's actually better looking in person than he is in pictures. And it's not like he didn't photograph well, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no.
So it was kind of shocking.
Now, was this like a 24/7 job? Like, you know,
kind of was. The thing about it that was, you know, not as 24/7 as it would be today was that, you know, if you think back, there were no cell phones back then, and there was no internet. So
Right. Really,
once you went home, you were kind of done. You know, you couldn't, it's like if you were out at, you know, a bar with your friends or at a party or at someone's house for dinner or somewhere, it's not like people could get a hold of you the way they can now. They either called you at home or at the office.
Right,
or
right.
So in a way, when I think about what it would have been like now, ooh, that would have been more than 24/7.
You would have had to hide your phone when you got home.
Exactly. It would have been insane. And then I was saying to a friend of mine the other day, like, I can't even imagine how many fake Twitter and you know, Facebook John F. Kennedy Jr. pages I would have had to be managing at this point,
like,
you know?
Yeah, you would have had to hire an assistant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would have been, I think it would have been really, really crazy. I mean, I think it would have been kind of fun, but really crazy.
Now, you made Caroline,
Caroline, yeah.
Very, you show her to be very normal, too, just like a regular normal girl, when everybody thought, you know, she was like an ice princess. Or
no, she was awesome. She was like a really down-to-earth kind of girl's girl. She wasn't one of those women who, like, she loved girls. She loved to, like, give you advice, and she loved to be, like, part of the group, and you know, she was a real girl's girl. She was great, and she was really warm.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's skip it around a little bit, but tell me about when you met Howard Stern.
Oh, my God.
Because I love Howard Stern.
Oh, my God, I love him
Howard
so much.
I've been a Howard Stern for 20 years.
Oh, my God, I love him so much. Yeah, I was over.
And I knew he was a nice guy. I just knew it. And when I read your, you know, chapter on him, it just validated it.
Such a great guy, so mild-mannered, so sweet, and really kind of downplayed his whole, you know, bad boy kind of thing. But he was so nice to everybody, but he was also really kind of aware of what, you know, what people thought of him, and what, so he tried to be really gracious and sweet and humble, and he was amazing.
Now, what made you decide to write this book now, so many years later?
I had done an interview on Good Morning America about John's charity, Reaching Up.
Mm-hmm.
And people started to kind of ask me again, like, wow, what was it like to work for him? And what was it like being at George and all of that? And from that, you know, people started to, publishing people and agents and people started to call me again and say, you know, you should really write a book, you should really write it. And I realized, like, they were willing to kind of pitch my Fairy Tale Interrupted, not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my story, like, where I
right.
came from and how I got the job, instead of, you know, were they getting divorced, were they, you know, all of that other nonsense that I wasn't really interested in talking about. Because mm-hmm. it wasn't really relevant, and it didn't have anything to do with them as I knew them or any,
right.
you know, like, I didn't want to do, like, a let's defend all the tabloid stuff, or let's, you know, it just wasn't interesting to me to do that.
Now, tell us about that fateful day when you Caroline did not want to go to the wedding.
No,
she
wanted to stay home. She wanted to stay home, and she was adamant that she was going to stay home, and she wasn't going to go, and let him go by himself. I'm done. I'm not going to go. You know, she was kind of in a bad mood about the fact that they had so much on their plate, and they hadn't been married for that long, and I think she was feeling a little bit like, when are we going to have some just, you know, alone kind of married time?
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard for them as a couple, not just because they were who they were, but also because, you know, he was trying to keep the magazine going and look for new, you know, investors and things like that. And I think, so for her, I think it was just more of a, you know, like, at the end of the day, I don't know if she would have gone anyway. I have no idea. And I'll always feel like I, you know, wished I hadn't said anything, you know, looking back. But, you know, it's what happened, and unfortunately it was just a really tragic accident.
Explain what you felt like when you heard what happened.
Well, when I first heard it, I actually didn't believe it. I just didn't think that that could be possible. I literally was like, okay, now we have to figure out where they are. So I was in denial in a way, because I was not in any way thinking, oh, wow, you know, they're gone or something's wrong. I was thinking, oh, well, I have to figure out where they are before people start to go crazy with all of this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me, you know, actually almost 2 days to come around and realize that they weren't coming back. But I think that was the only way that I could really do my job, you know, keep going, was to think that they were coming back. You know, because it was just too much of there was just no way I could digest that all at once. You know, it took me a long time.
Do you think about them a lot now?
All the time, yeah, all the time. You know, I think about them when I'm, you know, I think about him when work stuff comes up, because I have a PR firm now, and I think, God, what would he think about this or that? Or I wonder if this is the right thing to say about a client, or should I tell them this, or should I? You know, I always think about what he would think, because he was so smart, and he had such good instincts about all of this that I always think, I would love to get his take on certain things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, of course. Nancy, do you want to ask Rosemary?
Oh, yes. Well, I have your book in my hand, and I agree with Lisa. I just love the fact that he called you Rosie.
I know, and no one ever did, except for my
family.
And
no one since, or?
What's that?
Has anyone called you Rosie since?
Well, now everyone does.
Oh!
The book does, which is actually kind of nice.
Right,
kind
that's
of a little
sweet,
tribute to him.
A very
I feel like.
Sweet reminder.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really nice reminder. But now
but
everyone
was nice. I loved, like Lisa said, we loved how you both teased each other, almost kind of like brother and sister.
Oh, it was exactly like that. It was exactly like that, and it was relentless.
And I can just picture too. You mentioned in your book, the more frazzled he got, the calmer. You had to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more you kind of had to breathe and just make believe everything was fine.
Yeah. So I can also picture him. How often did he squeeze on that stress ball?
Every day. Every day. At some point, every single day. Yeah, that was his thing. That and water. He'd drink water constantly. He always had a thing of water. And I used to joke with him sometimes, and I'd be like, you know what, you're just not focusing. Where's your bottle? <'Cause> I'm like, you're like a little two-year-old. We need your bottle to get you to calm down and focus.
Oh. Well, in Fairy Tale Interrupted, it's just a beautiful, beautiful, we couldn't put it down.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Even my Was husband it fun? Read it. My husband read it in one day.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome. Oh,
thank you. You are going to just love this book. It's so you, and because he knows I was fascinated with them.
That's so great. Thank you. I'm really glad you guys liked it. Seriously, I was so scared in the beginning of what people would think, but I'm really happy with the response. People seem to really love it, and I'm excited.
Did you get in touch with Caroline before you wrote the book?
No, I actually didn't do that with anyone. I was telling someone the other day, like, my sister's had to wait until the book came out before they could get a copy, because I just felt like if I started to put it out there for people to look at and read and, you know, talk about, I think, well, I'll want to change this, and then I'll want to change that, and then, and I just thought, I don't want to do that, because I'm afraid I'm going to kind of mess it up. Like, I have to just let it go at some point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I did.
Did he ever talk to you about possible political future ideas he had for himself?
Yeah, I mean, he did. He talked about, you know, possibly running for governor, and he talked about, he talked about the idea of going into politics once George was a success. He wasn't going to leave George to go do that, because he really thought that it was important for him to have a success under his belt before he did the next thing. But I remember one time him saying to me, we were talking and someone said, oh, John should run for mayor. And he was like, I would never run for mayor. And I said, why not? And he said, because who was the last mayor, you know, who became president? I thought, oh, wow. So I think he really did think about it. I just think it was something that he had expressed more than once, that it was something that he would only do once George, you know, was a success.
Well, it's amazing. I have a quote here that I wrote down because I thought it was so funny. In your book, when he said, oh, Rosie, you're going to have a miserable day if you don't find some time for me to work out.
Yeah. He would be, if he couldn't work out, he was in the worst mood. It was the worst. It was like, oh, God, this is going to be really bad. And I remember Carolyn used to say, did he go to the gym? And I'm like, no. She'd be like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. You mean he hasn't worked out all day? And I'm like, no. She's like, can you just get some rollerblades on him and get him out of there? I'm like, yeah, I think I can. Because he just, that's how he released his tension. He really, you know, he worked out. That's what he did.
And that's how we saw him, too, in pictures,
yeah,
and on the news,
yeah,
and what
so
he was doing. Now,
always.
Did he call you Rosie from day one?
He called me Rose at first. And then I don't know when he just started calling me Rosie. And I thought, wow, that's so weird. Because only my family really called me that. So it was kind of, in a way, startling, but it was also really sweet. You know, it was really nice.
Experiment.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. It was really nice.
Now, we're talking about it in nice terms. I'm sure there were times when he yelled, Rosie.
Oh, yeah, a lot. Rosie, where's my, you know, whatever.
Did you ever make you so mad you that you were thinking of quitting?
Yeah, sure. There were times when I was like, oh, is this really worth it? But it always was. But also, there's one thing about, you know, that I realized about the difference between somebody who's, you know, you're just around somebody all day and they're being annoying or they're being who they are. There's a difference between that and being mean, and he was never, like, intentionally cutting or mean.
Right.
And, you know, I noticed that, you know, sometimes with, you know, bosses in general sometimes can be, or just people in general can be, like, sometimes it's just better to say nothing than to snap something that you don't really mean. And I think while he could be annoying and he could be, you know, snappy sometimes, like anyone can when they're in a bad mood, it was never with malicious intent. It was never intended to hurt your feelings. And he always felt bad if he hurt your feelings.
You were probably a breath of fresh air to him because he could be himself. He didn't have to act. He didn't have to worry about you judging him. He knew that you had his back. It was just,
yeah, I mean, I think he,
relaxing relationship for him.
Yeah, I think he understood that I kind of saw him as like an older brother, and it was, you know, it was nice for him. It was nice for him to have that kind of relationship, you know. And he was very close with his sister as well, so I think he had that. He knew how to, you know, deal with a girl and with women and being around them and teasing, and so he was great that way. He really was.
Do you think Carolyn was ever jealous of you?
No. Oh, God, no. Not at all. No. No, not at all. I think she loved the fact that there was someone there who could kind of relate to what she was going through, you know? So it was always a source of comfort to her to have, you know, someone around, not only
a girlfriend,
but also someone who understood who he was and what his life was, you know, was like, so that she didn't feel like she was going through it alone, you know.
Did you go to their wedding?
I did not go to their wedding.
Did you help plan it?
I did, but I didn't go to the wedding.
How come?
Well, you know, I felt like...
Invited?
I was, but I felt like if I went, people would be, you know, if I was away and they were away, you know, people would be suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt like there was going to be such a huge onslaught of calls and messages, and people were going to be going crazy. And I felt like someone needed to be, you know, it was kind of my job to be there to, you know, to oversee all of it.
Wow,
and even,
that's
even when I look back now, I still don't think I would have gone. You know, I just don't think it was. I felt like it was my job to be there. You know, to really manage what was going to go on and the chaos that came after. You know.
Now you had a hard time getting a job after he passed away. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, as anyone can probably relate, who do you work for after him?
Right.
You know, it's like you're working for the most famous, one of the most beloved people in the world, and then suddenly that's gone. It's like, I think in the beginning I felt like I was trying to replace it, which wasn't such a good idea. You know, you can't replace it. But at the time, I think... I felt like I had to, you know, I didn't want to let go of the fact that I had probably one of the best jobs in the world, and I didn't know what else to do. You know, like I was trying to match it, you know, and there was no way to do that. So it took me a while kind of to find my way.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Your fairy tale was interrupted too.
Exactly. And that's basically what the book, you know, talks about, because it was not easy to just pick up and go on. You know, it was hard.
I bet.
Well, we both love the title of your book. Was it easy to come up with that title?
No. I actually came up with it at an airport. I was on my way to meet a client of mine, and I was sitting in the airport with my agent, who was also going to be working with the same client, and we were thinking of, you know, I was really upset because they had come up with a title that I really didn't like. So I thought, they said, well, come up with a better one. You know, they were kind of like, we're open to suggestions. And we just started sitting there scribbling on a napkin. And I came up with it on the napkin. And when I got back to New York, I emailed my publisher and they said, that's it. It's Fairy Tale Interrupted. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm so excited. So they liked it.
Oh, that's great. How did you choose the pictures for the covers, the front and the back?
Well, the front, we were going back and forth about whether or not we would have pictures at all in the book. So we weren't quite sure about that. And then the front, the cover, that's not the cover I wanted. I didn't want to put them on the cover at all. I didn't want them to be, you know, I didn't want their name on it. I didn't want their image on it. Because I didn't want people to think that it was about them. And then we ended up coming up with, they came up with that cover. And I literally walked, my publisher called me at, I think it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and said, we need you to come here for a meeting at 4 o'clock. And I went and I walked into her office, and she had a glass of wine in her hand and a glass of wine for me, and she said, you need to sit down and look at this cover, have a glass of wine, and then you need to sit down and look at this because we all really love it, and there's got to be a way to convince you to have this be the cover. And it took a week. It took a week and a half, and then finally I relented. But I think it's a beautiful image. I really do.
It is.
And I think I love it because they're not looking right at, you know, right at the camera, and they don't look like they're being bothered in any way. And I don't know, I just really, I came around to it. And I think it was the right decision.
I think it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, you are a delight, and we would very much like to meet you in New York City sometime.
Anytime. I'm here. I'd love to meet you guys.
Have a glass of wine or a cup of coffee would be just wonderful.
Oh, I would love that. That would be awesome. So tell me when you're here, and I'll be there.
Oh, thank you. And please, we would enjoy having you return to Chit Chat Cafe Live.
Sure.
We could chat about girl talk and anything we want.
Awesome. There's tons of stuff I can talk to you guys about, so I'll be in touch, definitely.
Yes, please do.
Well, we will continue.
So
we're going to continue to promote your book,
not only
on our website, and our listeners can continue to listen to this archive as a download, but we're going to promote it with our Chit Chat Cafe Live book club as well, and thank you for sharing it, and thank you for being our guest.
Oh, thank you guys for having
me so much.
Have a great night, and I hope to meet you guys soon. I'll be in touch. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye, Rosemary.
Bye. Good night. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
Bye. What a sweetheart. Shit. Adorable.
Yes. Well, Lisa, what a delightful hour. Just wonderful, wonderful two shows. We'd like to give a special thank you to our fabulous sponsors, St. Croix Orthopedics, Intimacy Bras, and Laura Geller Makeup. By the way, I think she might be coming up on QVC, so check her out. And a big wholehearted thank you to Corey King. He does such a great job producing our show with our website. He's just wonderful. Enjoy the Corey King Show. It's live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on Artists First World Radio Network, and check out some of his archives as well.
We'd like to thank our guests tonight, Tippi Hedren and Rosemary Terenzio, and I'm reminding everyone to join our show archives. All you have to do is go to our webpage, scroll down to the date you'd like to listen, click on the date, and just enjoy a show while you're playing on Facebook or doing work. It's like a fun little thing. We have Davy Jones, we've had Melania Trump, we've had Mario Andretti, we've had so many cool guests. So go to the guest of your choice and listen to our archives. So Nancy, it's been fun.
Yes.
Good night.
Can't wait till the next week.
Yep. We'll see everybody next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.